Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back one last time this week. It is the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. My name is Adam Pfeiffer, joined, as always, on this late Thursday evening by my lovely co-host, Big Papa Joe, Joe Metz. We're rolling with it. Don't care what you say. Joe's watching Milwaukee right now, which makes him feel good. But, Joe, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Adam? Yeah, I'm watching the Bucks game in the background. It's I'll try and contain both my frustration and excitement. I'll keep it to a minimum because we have a whole lot of basketball to get to for Friday.
Yeah, we have – it was originally a 13-game slate, got bumped down to 11 after a couple postponements. But real quick before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to everybody at FTN that was nominated for an FSWA award today. D-Bro got nominated for DFS Writer of the Year. Jeff Ratcliffe got nominated for multiple awards, including, I believe, Best Radio Show. Brad Evans got nominated for Best Football Article. Like, we got a bunch of great nominations from bunch of great writers and podcasters and you know, video guys. Pat Mayo got nominated because, of course he did. Why wouldn't he? So shout out to everybody at FTN and everybody in general that that was nominated. That was good stuff. All right. Let's get to these games. We'll start with Chicago at Charlotte. Looks like Cody Zeller will finally be back for the Hornets after missing so much time with his hand injury. He broke his hand the first game of the season, hasn't played since. So he'll be back. Maybe they'll go less small in their front court, but I don't see Cody Zeller play. I mean, it's not like a foot or anything, but he wasn't a guy playing 35 minutes or anything. He was like 19 to 22 minutes a game. And then Wendell Carter Jr. is listed as doubtful for the Bulls on the other side of this game, with a thigh injury. Let's start with the Bulls. I mean, Zach LaVine, 9,500. He's coming off a huge game. We know LaVine has those 50-point ceiling games in his range of outcomes. This matchup, there's nothing really wrong with it. But my play is Lauri Markkanen, and I'll talk about it in a minute because there's a lot that goes into it, and obviously Wendell Carter Jr. being out helps. But what do you think of Chicago here?
I'm kind of on the same line of thought as you are. I'm curious what the Bulls do in terms of their starting rotation. My gut is telling me they'll move Lowry to the five, put either, you know, Pat Williams, Otto Porter at the four, and run a little smaller. Because, I highly doubt they start Daniel Gafford at the five, right?
They could, but here's my thinking. They don't have any other viable backup centers unless they finally use Felicio or Luke Kornet in the rotation, which they haven't done since the beginning of January. So, especially against Charlotte, like if they're facing a different interior or different front court, I would say maybe they go Markkanen and Daniel Gafford. But I think you're right. I think they start Markkanen at the five, and then, you know, whoever's healthy between Otto Porter and you know, if Otto Porter's good to go, or Patrick Williams, he might not even play either, or maybe like Thaddeus Young's at the four. I do agree. I think Markkanen starts at the five in this game, but like he could also still play plenty of four.
Yeah, and because of, I mean, either way, I think Markkanen is I don't want to say by far the best Bulls play, but you know, price baked into what we're looking at, he just makes the most sense. Like $6,600 is just too cheap. He was $6,700 last slate. His minutes are in that 33 to 35 range. The usage rate is there. The rebounding rate is going to go up with Wendell Carter Jr. out and out of the paint alone. It just comes down to how efficient he is from the field, because he'll have his ceiling games where he shoots like at least 50%. But the games he struggles, you know, he'll shoot under 40%, under like 30% from three. So if there's any matchup for him to perform well from the field, I do think it's Charlotte. And I really don't think that the return of Cody Zeller impacts him whatsoever in this game. It might, if anything, like I would trust him against Cody Zeller in the paint a little more than I would against Bismack in those, you know, 19 to 20 minutes that he was getting.
Yeah, so I love Markkanen here for a few reasons. Charlotte's interior we know is bad in the first place, but he gets the highest usage bump on the Bulls with Wendell Carter Jr. off the floor. His usage climbs up by about 4%, or just over 4% actually. So he's got a 27% usage rate with Carter off the floor, 1.3 fantasy points per minute. You have Charlotte that's allowing So Charlotte is playing zone defense at the highest rate in the NBA. They're playing zone like 22% of the time. And when you're playing against a zone defense, they're almost inviting you to take threes. And that's why just over 38% of the points. Right, exactly. And that's why over 38% of the points allowed by the Hornets this year have come from three. It's the third highest rate in basketball. They've also allowed the most three-pointers per game to power forwards and the most real points per game to power forwards. Then you have the fact that, okay, they're giving up a lot of threes, they're playing a lot of zone defense. That's, as a result, they're giving up easily the most spot-up points per game at 42.3 per game. Markkanen's averaging six spot-up points per game, 11th most in basketball. It just sets up perfectly for Markkanen. He is my favorite player from this game, and I started doing research, you know, an hour or so before the podcast, and from the research I've started to do, he's one of my favorite plays of the slate. If Gafford starts, you can take a shot on him. I probably don't feel great about it, though, because he's only center eligible. He still will probably play at most maybe 22 minutes, especially if Charlotte continues to go small with P.J. Washington at the five.
Yeah, yeah.
That would just really hurt, and that would make this an even better spot for Markkanen. Do you have interest? Say Otto Porter Jr. and Patrick Williams are out, and Thaddeus Young at 4,700. Williams is questionable.
I think 4,700 is.
Have you seen anything on Porter? Because Porter didn't play.
I have not seen anything. He didn't play Monday.
Right. And they haven't played since Monday, correct?
Correct. I think, you know, I think it would take both of these guys to be out for me to feel comfortable with $4,700 for Thad Young. Because, you know, even with one of them out, we could still see him crack 20 minutes, but not much more. So I think if he gets in that 25-minute range like he did Monday, it's not hard for him to walk into 25 fantasy points, which at 4,700 is more than enough. Because in addition to scoring, like, he's going to crash the glass, he's going to get you stocks. And again, like how we said with Markkanen, this is a matchup where he is able to do so. And anytime they go small at the five, there's a chance that Thad Young will play more at the four with Markkanen at the five, or if they go small enough with PJ Washington at the five, they could even throw Thad Young at the five. So I like it for 4,700, but it's just a play that I will want to watch the injury report throughout the game, or the day, excuse me. I have more interest in Thad at 4,700 than I do at Daniel Gafford at 3,100, even if he does start.
I think he plays more than like 22 minutes.
I was going to say like 19. I think 22 might even be generous, but either way, like, I understand that, especially in cash games, you know, ownership will flock to a value play that starts for 3,100.
Especially because we didn't get Xavier Tillman the other night.
Exactly. But like, this is also, you know, Adam, you and I have talked about how many good centers there are this season. Like, he's not power forward eligible, so he really, yeah. really
And they all play for Cleveland, so it's crazy.
Yeah. I just don't know if I'm not comfortable taking that risk and compromising one of my center spots with Daniel Gafford.
I haven't played Coby White this year. He hasn't been as good. This price has never been like at a great
point. I think a lot of it just has to be with Levine. I mean, he's obviously always been a high usage player, but he's just taking so many more shots. He's taking like 30 shots a game.
And I like the point guards on the other side of this game more than Coby White. So like, if you're stacking this game, I get it, but the real interest is with Lauri Markkanen. Let's go to Charlotte, because LaMelo Ball is showing so much potential in fantasy, obviously, with his peripherals. He leads the team in rebounding rate and assist rate. They're at 24 and 27% respectively. The problem is he's almost 8K. He's the most expensive player on this team, and he's still not starting, and he's still, you know, ceiling-wise, 30 minutes. Like, there's too many 25, 26-minute games from him. I haven't seen anything about them finally starting him. So, like, that's a tough price, even in this matchup, because LaMelo's been super efficient on a fantasy point-per-minute basis. But, I mean, 7,800, if he's only going to play 25 minutes, like, that's still risky.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, when it comes to DFS, especially in a full slate, like, regardless of price, you want to prioritize players who are starting. When you factor in a player, like, yeah, he has upside, but 8K for a player that's not starting is a lot. Like, you have to get LaMelo Ball. I mean, on a full 11-game slate, you'd like your guys to get 6X plus. You need to have LaMelo Ball get you close to a triple-double. If not like a Ben Simmons triple double, like we need like a 17, 13, and 10 with a couple steals or blocks to really pay off this price. And while the potential's there, he's not, I mean, seeing 30 minutes is not a guarantee, so it makes it harder to envision that really happening. I get it in tournaments, but it just does not feel safe whatsoever to me.
Yeah, I mean,
when
Hayward,
will they start him? That's the question.
I don't know. It's got to be soon. We'll see if, you know, Terry Rozier or Devontae Graham get any interest at the trade deadline. But, like, Gordon Hayward is, what, $100 more or $100 cheaper? Is he $7,900, $7,700? $7,700
Gordon
less.
Gordon Hayward is $7,700, yeah.
And he's averaging 34 minutes a game. He is taking plenty of shots. His peripherals have been fine. And I like this spot for him. I mean, the Bulls, bad defense, are second in the league in pace. And Gordon Hayward is averaging over 6 transition points per game. That's top 5 in the league. I think it's just a better play to go to Hayward. And then I also don't hate Devontae Graham, who I haven't really been on this year. He started the season off shooting terribly, but he's starting to pick it up a bit. He's only 6,200, and even with LaMelo Ball there, his minutes have been so strong lately. 38, 37, 36, 35, 37, 39. 6,200 against a Bulls team that is 30th against primary ball handlers, 27th against crafty finishers, and 28th against point forwards. A point forward more so towards Hayward. That would be my two favorite plays from Charlotte.
Yeah, I really, really like that. I like that Devontae Graham call. In addition to those other archetypes, you mentioned Chicago is also 29th in the league against dimers. And while Devontae Graham might not categorize as a dimer on our advanced DVP yet, like, he still had 7+ assists in 7 of his last 8 games. He's averaging over 6 a game. So, like, he does have that facilitator role, albeit not just on his archetype. So I think that does cater more to him. And at 6,200, I'm totally fine taking a shot there.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
Houston at Detroit. This game has a lot, obviously, with Houston being so, just so many moving parts this year. John Wall once again ruled out, and then Christian Wood's also been ruled out with an ankle injury.
Yeah, so how much DeMarcus Cousins are we having? Because that's another reason why we won't play Daniel Gafford.
Exactly. DeMarcus Cousins, there's a good chance he still doesn't play 27 minutes in this game, and it doesn't matter. Because at 4,400, with how ridiculously efficient he is, I mean, Cousins, 1.3 fantasy points per minute, 25% usage rate, 40% rebounding rate, 20% assist rate leads the team with Wall and Christian Wood off the floor this season. He could easily go like 17, 10, and 5 in 23 minutes. Mm-hmm. Detroit, the matchup against Detroit is good. Like, just play him. And if he somehow plays 28 to 30 minutes, you will probably get 45 to 50 fantasy points out of him.
Yep, and what do you think his ownership will be? Like, single entry tournaments, I'd probably pay him for 40% plus.
I was gonna say at least 45, yeah.
Yeah. So that's chalk I'm willing to eat. Now, I mean, the question then though comes, you know, with Christian Wood and John Wall out, like, I'm more than happy to pay $8K for Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. Like, this is gonna be a super concentrated offense. I mean, we've seen it the last two games with just John Wall out. Victor Oladipo, in his two games since joining the Rockets, has a 38% usage rate. He's averaging 81 touches per game. And like I talked about before, with the Pacers, he wasn't running a ton of pick and roll because Malcolm Brogdon was doing that. With John Wall out in Houston right now, he's like, it's ridiculous. 17 points per game in two games as the primary ball handler in the pick and roll, 15 possessions per game. Like, the ball is just in his hands at all times. 7.5 minutes of possession, 8K. It may seem steep because we haven't seen him at this price in a while, but you just got to understand as well that this is his team right now.
He literally waltzed into 45 fantasy points when shooting 31% last game. Like, he started the game like 1 for 7 mm-hmm. or 1 for 8 or like 3 for 13. Like, he's going to have the opportunity to shoot literally whenever he wants to. So I would argue this is still underpriced for him in his current role.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, he was already dominating usage while sharing the floor with Christian Wood, but like, DeMarcus Cousins probably isn't going to play the minutes Christian Wood was playing in his absence. So it's another low usage player when Cousins isn't on the floor, where maybe they start PJ Tucker at the five, or not start him, but play him at the five. And if that's the case, I think Tucker could be interesting at 4,100. He has no usage, we know that, but this could be a spot if he's playing more five where he could walk into some rebounds, especially if Cousins isn't going to play, you know, 30 plus minutes. They just don't have anybody else to play at the five, right? I mean, like, Christian Wood and Cousins were splitting the time there, and that's really all they have. That's Tucker who plays the five. They're not going to play Kuroks at the five or anything like that.
No, and obviously, like, Daniel House is still out, so that'll open up even more minutes at the four for Tucker if they want him to play there. I'm totally on board with PJ Tucker tomorrow.
Any Jayshon Tate?
That's what I was just about to say. Like, Jayshon Tate's price is pretty appealing. Like, I mean, sure, he's not the greatest per minute producer, but like the minutes are there.
Better than PJ Tucker.
He played 37 minutes last game. Of the two, because I mean, let's see, Tate's not $800 more. I think I'd feel a little safer with Jayshon Tate's upside. Or a floor, excuse me. I think he has a higher floor, but I totally understand taking the 800 and running with PJ Tucker because at the end of the day, like, their range of outcomes aren't drastically different.
Right.
So I don't mind either of them. I still also have some passing interest in Eric Gordon under 6K. Like, minutes are going to be there. He's shooting 20 times a game. He's not going to get you many peripherals, but you have to think more usage and rebounding opportunities will open up with Christian Wood off the court. So he might waltz into a little more production.
Let's go to the Detroit side. Jeremy Grant back up over 8K after scoring just over 47 fantasy points the last game. He's clearly been where we've been starting with this team. It's another pretty solid matchup here. I have no problem with Jeremy Grant here as a run back option. He's just taking so many shots, at least 19 in five straight games, including 22 shots last game. The assists are higher. I've talked about how his touches per game are up. His usage rate's up like 6%. Really just have no problem with him at all. Same thing with Derrick Rose now. He's played 27 and 28 minutes in the last two games. Both have been competitive. I think this game could be competitive. He's still a high usage guy. I think Derrick Rose at 5,500 is perfectly fine as like a mid-tier play as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Outside of those two, like, I'm looking at like the advanced DVP for Houston. It's hard to really take it with anything more than a grain of salt because so much of it is factoring in Christian Wood, obviously, who is a big paint presence. So when you look at, you know, they're ninth against scorers, that probably has to do a lot with the fact that their rim protection is pretty elite. Like Jeremy Grant, you pull up his archetypes, they're eighth against stretch bigs, 10th against skilled centers. Like, these are numbers that we expect to get marginally worse with Christian Wood out. So I like the Grant call. I like the Derrick Rose call. I think Derrick Rose's usage rate at, what, 5,500? Like, that's just too cheap. Outside of those two, I don't have a ton of interest in this team with Josh Jackson probable. You know, if he was out, I'd have a little more interest in the likes of Derrick Rose, of DeLon Wright, even maybe some Mason Plumlee, who at 5,300, I really don't mind Mason Plumlee at all. It's just whether or not he's going to get to that 30-minute threshold. But otherwise than that, like, I'm off Blake Griffin tomorrow. But this is a fine game that you can stack if you want to and get a little different.
I just think Blake Griffin's just checked out.
Yeah, and it's not like checked out like he hates what he's doing. It's just his role. They almost don't have a role for an on the court role for him. I mean, he did play 39 minutes last game at 34 fantasy points, but I'm not going to hang my hat on that.
Right. All right, let's keep moving on. Orlando Magic at the Indiana Pacers. Evan Fournier returned to the lineup after a long absence. 9 straight games he missed before returning the other night. Solid game, 28 minutes, 24 real points, 32 fantasy points. Aaron Gordon, he's 7,600. The price keeps going up, but I just love the usage right now. We talked in depth about it on the last podcast, how he leads his team in assist rate over the last week and a half. He's playing more point forward. He's playing more four in the first place with Jonathan Isaac still out, and that's just helping his rebounding potential. I still have interest in Aaron Gordon as long as he's in this role. And Evan Fournier being back doesn't hurt him in terms of ball handling because Evan Fournier, everything comes off the ball for him when he's scoring. He's not a guy that they very often just say, okay, give him the ball, let him ISO. It's a lot of just off-ball movement. So I don't think that really hurts him. And if anything, okay, maybe he loses some usage, but like he also gets another shooter because Dwayne Bacon and James Ennis and the guys that have been replacing him aren't knockdown shooters. So, the Magic for me, Vucevic, he was like our lock last game. Got off to a slow start, but he ended up playing 43 minutes at over 50 fantasy points. Still at under 9K, I have interest. I just love this Magic team right now with, I don't want to say love, but they're just a lot easier to target for fantasy with their backcourt completely depleted outside of Cole Anthony, who just really has not been that good. And you talked about it. They don't want to run him 35 minutes or anything right now.
Yeah, agreed. I think I still like Vucevic, but this isn't a matchup I'll go out of my way to target him in, especially even at 8,900. If there is a Magic player I'm going to play, it is Aaron Gordon, especially with that new positional flexibility that he does carry at point guard and small forward. And if you are in the betting market listening to this podcast, like, his assist prop is consistently low compared to what he's doing. No, like, I got it at 4.5 last game. I assume it will go up to 5.5, but like, you maybe without Juice, but you could probably find it with Juice at like 4.5. I think that's one to target. Outside of them, though, I don't really have a ton of interest. I just don't ever love attacking Indiana's defense. Just,
yeah,
they're a good defensive team. They really slow the game down.
And by the way, you want to talk about being caught up. Our advanced DVP has had Aaron Gordon as a point forward for a little bit now. So just another
just
great
just another plug. Just another. what do you think of the Pacers side of the ball? Because much like I don't like to target Indiana much defensively, the same kind of rings true for Orlando. Like, they're just not a team I go out of my way to target. They're running slower without Markel Fultz, albeit a little faster than last season, but they're still a pretty stout defensive unit.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think you can ever go wrong with Brogdon or Sabonis. They're both top seven in touches per game. It's hard for them to really fail, but yeah, I mean, Orlando's 21st in pace. Indiana's right around the middle of the pack. Like, it's not an overly exciting game. Two good enough defenses. I don't really think anybody from this game's a must play. We'll obviously have to see if Miles Turner's back. He's questionable. Again, he's missed the last two games. Doug McDermott's been starting at the four. And he actually had a really nice game the other night. Walked into the rebounds, finally. 8 rebounds. I mean, at 5K, McDermott wouldn't be the worst if he's starting at the power forward again, especially because they're obviously without TJ Warren and Caris LeVert, so like, the wings are just even more depleted in the first place. But yeah, like, Justin Holiday, 4,800, you could do worse. You know the minutes are going to be there, but what happens if Jeremy Lamb's minutes start to ramp back up? That's also a question mark. I think from this game, Brogdon would be my favorite at 8,200. Like, yeah, I know he's been under 40 in three of the last four, but that's a really nice price tag for a guy, like I said, top five in, I think, time of possession per game and touches per game. Like, he had 26 points in his last game, but his peripherals were down. He's usually been a really good assist guy, so I think that kind of balances out. The shots have been there at least 18 in nine of his last 10. So I like Brogdon the most from this team.
I like that too. I also like, you know, looking down in terms of price, I don't hate Justin Holiday at all. With obviously Oladipo gone, he's getting really, really elite run. Like, he's played 38 minutes last game, 35 the game before. He's not going to be a high usage player. He's not going to be a massive peripheral guy, but at 4,800, you don't need him to be. So he's one of those guys we talk about on the podcast where if you have $5,000 left for the last spot in your lineup, I would be perfectly comfortable with Justin Holiday. The other player who I'm a little more intrigued with than anything else is Jeremy Lamb. Played 19 minutes in his season debut. I expect it to get about to like probably 21, 22. We know he's a high usage player when he's on the court, even with Sabonis and Brogdon. We know how good he is offensively. He's only 3,700. So at that price, you know, it is risky, but I definitely don't hate the idea of Jeremy Lamb at this price, knowing that there's that void from Oladipo.
Fair enough. Let's move on to Brooklyn and Cleveland. And
I'm going to give you the floor for like,
well, 5 minutes. Well, first I got to say, because in the article I did and in the podcast we did, I didn't have a lot of interest in this game because there was a lot of uncertainty. We all thought Brooklyn would just take care of business. And then the game goes to double overtime, which helps. So I guess I'll take the L on not really having interest in that game. But yeah, like, there's a certain person who works for FTN and does a lot of tennis content that thinks Colin Sexton's not good. I'm not going to drop any names, but his name does rhyme with, Hosh Los.
Gosh, gross.
Yeah. So no, but Colin Sexton was unbelievable.
Cleveland hasn't seen that type of run.
since the Eastern LeBron's Conference Finals against Detroit. I remember exactly where I was when I was watching that game too.
Oddly enough, so I'm not a Cavs fan, but so do I. Like, that was insane. Yeah.
20 of their last 20 points for Colin Sexton, 38 minutes, 29 shots. We'll see if Darius Garland's back in this game. He's questionable with that shoulder. But did we get any – I think the question is, did we get any questions answered from this game? Andre Drummond in a two-overtime game played 26 minutes. He wasn't in foul trouble. Jared Allen came off the bench. I
think the answer we got there is that he might slowly be phased out.
Right. Jared Allen came off the bench and just kind of did what Jared Allen does and plays well. He double-doubled 12-11, four blocks, two assists in 31 minutes. I don't know how you can play Andre Drummond at 9,400 right now. At the same time, it's almost like the opposite. And it's like the same thing in Brooklyn, but like the price tags are different, right? Where it was Allen was the more expensive one and DeAndre Jordan was the cheap option. Now it's Drummond's not only expensive, but really expensive, and Jared Allen's still kind of expensive. So it's tough to trust. The Cleveland prices as a whole are just up there, and it's kind of tough.
I agree, 100%. I think, I don't think we see, obviously, a game like we did the first game in double overtime. I'm not saying Brooklyn's going to blow them out of the water, but the chances are still relatively high. I don't mind Colin Sexton at his price, but outside of him, there's really no one on Cleveland I'm considering. You flip to the Brooklyn side of the ball, and all three studs played pretty damn well together. None of them, Kevin Durant, he finished, 75, 77 fantasy points? 77.
Yep.
At his price, he made it pretty damn apparent that he is the alpha in this offense when it comes down to it. So I'm totally fine with Kevin Durant at 10-7. I don't hate James Harden at 10-8. And again, Kyrie at 9K, obviously all of their numbers are a bit inflated from the double overtime, but let me pull up. Do you have the usage rates in front of you from this game?
I can get them. I was looking at touches, but I can pull up usage as well. Durant had 91 touches, most of the team. Irving was at 87. James Harden was not up there. But I'm
really,
I got the usage.
I'm pulling up the usage rate right now. Okay,
I have it right now. So last game against Cleveland, again, the usage rates were for the Brooklyn Nets. Where are you, Brooklyn? Kyrie Irving led the way at 31.2%. Then you scroll down, and where is the rest of Brooklyn? That is the question. There's no way Durant was this low.
28. But I also see James Harden at 18. There's no way that it was that low.
It might have been.
Wow. I mean, I don't. If it was, I do not expect that to be a theme. Wow.
I mean, they all went crazy.
But yeah, again, they did. I think maybe take that with a grain of salt because they all did produce really well. But
we can definitely without question say Durant's the alpha if there were is an alpha on of these three.
Yeah.
Durant's the guy.
Yeah.
He's back to being second best player in the league, third best player in the league, whatever. He's an MVP candidate. He's been ridiculous. But Kyrie's price also didn't move.
That's the big selling point with Kyrie to me. I mean, anytime Kyrie is 9K, I think is a spot to target, regardless of opponent, regardless of who's on his team, because we know the ceiling. So I think my personal priority for Brooklyn probably goes Durant, Kyrie, Harden. But I think it's Durant 1A, Kyrie 1B.
I also actually don't hate Jeff Green at 4,600. He's playing huge minutes for this team because they need him to. And he's also probably going to play a lot of small ball five for this team until they get another center. Because I don't think DeAndre Jordan's playing 38 minutes anytime soon. And they just don't have anybody else. I guess he did play 30 minutes against Milwaukee, but 24 last game in a double overtime contest against Drummond and Jared Allen is kind of interesting. So I don't hate Jeff Green at 4,600. And then we talked about Joe Harris. He played huge minutes. He had 9 rebounds, but he only went 2 of 10 from the field. And if he's not hitting the shots, the few shots he's getting, he's not going to do much for you.
Yep, agreed.
All right, we'll see if Cleveland can win again. That'd be something. Another game. So these next three games, these next two games, are all games we saw on Wednesday night. They're just kind of home and homes. But Boston at Philadelphia. Seth Curry looked like he was going to play in that Boston game. He was taken off the injury report, didn't play, but he's now probable. It'll be his first game off the COVID list. Jason Tatum still out. So this is kind of the same game. And really, we can kind of be quick with this one. The only thing I'll say is Kemba Walker's minutes restriction has been increased to 25 to 28 minutes ahead of this game. And that's where he becomes interesting, because he has had a massive usage rate through the first two games since he's been back from injury. Like massive. 40.5% in those two games.
Oh. I mean, and even, you know, you bump that usage rate down to 27, 28%, and at those minutes, $6,500 is too cheap.
Like, they don't have anybody that can create other than Kemba. And it's the same thing we've been saying with Tatum and Brown, but now it's Brown, and Kemba.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously it's not anything close to an ideal matchup, but, like, when your usage rate is 40%, it doesn't matter. Like, that is 100% something I want to target. I mean, dollar for dollar, knowing his minutes are now in that 26 to 28 range, I like him more than Jaylen Brown in this game.
I mean, it's fair. Jaylen Brown, perfectly fine, too. I mean, he took 24 shots last game. The usage rate with Tatum off the floor is around 31%. Price has come down a little bit to 8,500. The Sixers are a tough matchup. But those are obviously the two guys you're looking at, and I don't even think you're considering anybody else on Boston right now. I don't know how you can. I mean, Tice played 27 minutes.
No, unless
you're not, he's coming off a huge game. You're not playing Daniel Tice at 5,300 when DeMarcus Cousins is on the slate. You know, Semi Ojeleye, Grant Williams, they just don't do anything.
Unless one of the bigs is out, I don't really target them.
And then for Philadelphia, I mean, congratulations. DraftKings finally priced Joel Embiid in the 10K range, and I still have interest because he's Joel Embiid, and he's been, in my opinion, the three MVPs of the league right now are Durant, Embiid, and Jokic. I don't think it's a question.
I agree.
So he's been great. He's, once again, my favorite player from this team. Not close.
He also just posted 42-10 on this team.
Right. They have no chance against him. They're bottom five in field goal percentage allowed at the rim. Ben Simmons' price has now come down to where he needs to be considered at 8,400. But still, like, on an 11-game slate, I don't know if Ben Simmons is going to get you 50 here.
No, I don't either.
Ben Simmons?
I think Ben Simmons, I love Ben Simmons as an NBA fan. Don't like him as a DFS player. Unless Joel Embiid is out.
Yeah,
but Joel Embiid's out, I like Tobias Harris more than I like Ben Simmons.
I mean, Ben Simmons has been under 10 field goal attempts in 7 of his last 10 games. Like, I'm not saying you got to take 20.
And the thing is, it's not like he's taking 9 every game. He took 5 last game. 3 games ago, he took 2.
Right.
Yeah, I have more interest. Obviously, his price has come down, and I get it. I have more interest in Tobias Harris at 7,100 than I do Ben Simmons at 84 or 83.
I agree. And I think Seth Curry at 5,100 just kind of fills that that role we talk about. He's the last player in your lineup. You know you're going to get 33, 34 minutes out of him, especially on a site like DraftKings where he can get hot from three. I have no problem with Seth Curry. All right, we can go through this game as well. This was on Wednesday night, Miami at Toronto. Same situation for Miami. Jimmy Butler out. Tyler Hero questionable. Goran Dragic is probable. It's literally the same thing. Gabe Vincent's probable again. We do have Pascal Siakam on the injury report. He's listed questionable with a groin. I mean, as if the Chris Boucher hype couldn't get any larger.
And this is a spot where Chris Boucher might be a little lower owned because of his dud last game. But now,
what was that about?
Only issue. Usually he steps in and just takes a ton of more shots. He only took 7 shots last game.
The minutes were down.
One rebound. That was the big sticking point to me. But either way, like 7,300, the only knock on him on Friday is the fact that he lost his power forward eligibility after last slate. So it's just a bit more restrictive. But I'm totally fine going there at 7,300. If Pascal Siakam's out, I'll have a hard time not forcing myself to go there.
Yeah, because then they can – then it, like, doesn't matter if they want to play Baines because they can just move Boucher to the 4.
Yep.
With Siakam off the floor, the usage rates are kind of all over the place. You know, everybody kind of gets some, right? Lowry 25%, Boucher 21%, Van Vliet 24.5%, Norman Powell 24.3%. This could help Norman Powell just play more minutes. Like, they're not afraid to play OG at the four. Norman Powell's only 4,300. I think he could be viable if Siakam's out. Then you definitely feel, you know, better about Lowry and Van Vliet, who are still kind of always viable, you know, floor options when they're under 8K because they play so many minutes. Do you have it? Does like, if Siakam's out, do you have more interest in like OG or Norman Powell?
I think my interest, I understand why there would be interest in both. I think I would have more interest in OG because I think he sees more of the power forward minutes. We already know he's getting 35 plus minutes a game, and he would just, I mean, I like his peripheral upside as is, but he'd be a really legitimate double-double threat if Siakam sits, in my opinion.
For Miami, Kendrick Nunn, we were on him, but his price has come up to 5,400. He's an easy fade if Hero's back, but like...
If Hero's not back, though, I'm fine going there at 5,400 because I don't think he's going to be popular at that price.
Right.
I'm not saying he's going to be like a staple, but he literally 2 days ago flashed his almost 50-point upside. That's still almost 10x that price, so I get it. I just... My gut is telling me Hero's going to come back. Three games. It seems, I don't know how bad these neck spasms are, but it seems like you're missing almost, over a week now. He's got to be mending in the right direction. But I don't think I'd get there at 7-1 if he does come back. The player on the Heat that I played too much of last slate was Bam. Salvaged his game with a bigger last quarter and a half, I'd say. But did not shoot well. I took the L on his point prop at 19.5 with Tyler Hero out. I was pretty disappointed in that. But I definitely am totally fine going back to the well at $8,600. Are you interested? I mean, I shouldn't have to ask if you're interested in Bam.
Yeah, I like
Bam. Because you always are. But on a slate, on an 11-game slate with already, we're 5-6 games in. We talked about a couple center options we really like. What's your take on Bam?
I think he's like really solid, just kind of how he always is, right? I don't think he's a guy that you're going to say, okay, you have to play Bam tonight.
Even if
Hero's out, like he's not a player that you have to play, but he's a really good one. I agree. Like if Hero's out, even at 5,400, Kendrick Nunn's going to play 35 minutes. And his usage rate's been really high. His touches per game have been high over the last couple games with Hero out. So I'd be perfectly fine going to him. I might even prefer him over Dragic at 6K. But yeah, Bam would be my favorite from his team. If Hero plays, I don't think he'd really be limited. So he'd be somewhat interesting in tournaments at 7,100. But we'll just have to wait and see. Moving on to Atlanta and Minnesota. Kevin Huerter is 5,900. So
they finally got it. So that maybe that's just a correction price of what it should have been.
Yeah.
On Wednesday. But I mean, Cam Reddish still questionable. DeAndre Hunter questionable. Danilo Gallinari doubtful. So if I would argue if one of Reddish or Hunter are out, that makes Huerter viable. But if both are out, he becomes one of the strongest per dollar plays on the slate.
I agree. I think he's really solid. Like I said, we've seen him handle the ball a lot more when Trae Young's off the floor. And like Rondo's not really playing any more than like 10 minutes a game on most nights. So you could see him handle the ball more. I have no problem with him. This is a great matchup all around. I mean, Trae Young, he's got back going.
Like, and even with Trae Young is doing Trae Young things, his price finally went up. It's still at a point where I'm okay playing him. And obviously Clint Capella has just been one of, maybe over the last week, the most dominant center in the NBA right now. Like over his last 10 days, he's literally averaging 21 and 15, in five games, and he had 76 DraftKings points last game. I'm totally fine going right back there. John Collins finally kind of came around last game. He started
everybody
off.
Everybody kind of got some for Atlanta.
That's a good point. Yeah, he had about 50 fantasy points. I don't know if, I mean, I'm fine with his price, but I'm not going to go out of my way to roster him. I think my favorite Hawks, assuming Hunter and Huerta are out, I think if I go 1-3, I think it'd be, or excuse me, Hunter and Gallinari are out. I go Huerta, Capella, and then Trae Young.
Yeah, and the thing I love about it is Trae Young and Capella correlate so well.
With the pick and roll. They run the pick and roll so well together.
So, like, if you want to play, if you play Clint Capella, like, I would play Trae Young as well, especially because this game has a lot of high scoring potential. Two faster paced teams, two really bad defenses. D'Angelo Russell, still 8,700. He wasn't great in the last game, but again, I mean, really good spot against one of the worst perimeter defenders in basketball. The usage rate's still going to be massive without Karl-Anthony Towns and Ricky Rubio, who are obviously still out. It's kind of the easy guy to run it back with, but Anthony Edwards, I thought he would play more minutes. He had one highlight play, and that's it. Still only played 23 minutes, shot 3 of 14, so he continues to shoot, but I don't think he can be trusted. And then you have the front court with Towns out. Jared Vanderbilt's minutes were down to 18 because, of course, they were. Got in a little bit of foul trouble. But Hernan Gomez is still out. They obviously have Naz Reid, who played 29 minutes and scored, you know, roughly 25 fantasy points. But he's not exactly cheap either. He's only center eligible. Like, the rest of Minnesota, I don't love. Like, Malik Beasley is okay at that price because the minutes are going to be there. But do you see anybody in Minnesota that really stands out to you other than Russell?
No, and it feels like a cop-out, like you said, saying Russell's just the easy run-back option, but he's arguably right now the only reliable asset on this team. I want to, like, Anthony Edwards' price is still so appealing to me, but the minutes are just, it's not the volume, it's the minutes that are just so volatile, and he's not an efficient enough player yet where I trust him in 20 to 23 minutes to get there at 4-6. So I can't, unfortunately, on a full slate with a good heart, can't recommend Anthony Edwards. It's really just D'Lo on Minnesota for me.
All right, moving on to Dallas at San Antonio. Luka suffered a minor leg injury in the last game, came back in and still scored 51 fantasy points. He's good to go, not on the injury report whatsoever.
On a Ben Simmons triple-double.
Right. Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxi Kleber, all still out for Dallas. Dwight Powell as well. And that's it. So Luka's under 11K. I have interest. Porzingis, though, was my dude in the last slate, and he smashed.
Same.
So,
and he's still too cheap.
I agree. He's just taking so many shots. 27-13 with 4 assists. San Antonio's defense isn't anything to fear. I think both Luka and Porzingis are a little bit too cheap. I don't worry about them taking away some usage from each other. I think at the end of the day, they just help each other, especially Luka helping Porzingis. And, you know, they've been on the floor together. Luka's been on the floor with Porzingis for over 100 minutes. He still has a 29% usage rate. He still has a 36% assist rate. He still has a 28% rebounding rate. And he's averaging 1.6 fantasy points per minute. I mean, that sounds like an 11K player to me.
Yep.
Yep. I'm probably not playing anybody else from Dallas on this slate, though. Like, Brunson's been starting, which, you know, the minutes have been there, but his usage isn't crazy. 4,700, I guess you could do worse. James Johnson, 45. Like, those would be the guys, but I'm not overly excited about them.
Yeah, I don't think you need to force in these ancillary pieces on a full slate, especially with, you know, Brunson's price starting to climb. Trey Burke is one at 4,900, who I don't mind. Just knowing how high usage of a player he is when he gets minutes, and he's seen 26 and 32 in the past two games, and 27 shot attempts in that span. So I'm fine going there. I just don't think you need to force your hand.
The Spurs side, I really like DeMar DeRozan here. Like, some people,
Dallas is really bad at the rim. So, I mean, for someone that slashes so much, exactly, it makes complete sense.
Exactly. And a lot of people will see DeRozan and think, oh, you know, they're really good against wings and guards and stuff and whatever. But, like, DeRozan's playing power forward so much, but he's still handling the ball. And his price has come down a lot after one bad game. Like, came down $600. Now he's under 8K. I don't love the shot attempts the last couple games, but one of those games was 25 minutes where Golden State blew out the Spurs. I'd like him to be a little bit more aggressive, but this definitely seems like a spot. I mean, like you said, Dallas bottom three in field goal percentage allowed at the rim, and DeRozan's averaging 18.4 drives per game, fifth most in basketball. You know, 6.5 of his shot attempts per game are coming off drives. Like, I think it's a really sneaky spot for DeMar DeRozan, and the price has come down, like I said. I still don't want to play Aldridge at 5,500. It's weird because I played LaMarcus Aldridge so much throughout his career in DFS. I still don't want to play him.
Yeah, I agree.
What do you think of the other guys like Keldon Johnson and DeJounte Murray? I loved Murray last game. I thought it was a perfect game for him, fast-paced. Mm-hmm. He was good in the minutes he got, but he just couldn't play 35 or 36.
I don't hate it. Per dollar basis, I kind of like Keldon Johnson more just because Keldon Johnson has proven that he is kind of immune to game script. Like, the game against Golden State got out of hand pretty quickly, and he played a good chunk of fourth quarter minutes. In the same vein, with that same theme in mind, I really don't mind Devin Vassell. Like, he's seen 26, 27 minutes in the last two games, 20-plus in five straight games, scored 21-plus DraftKings points in four straight games, gives you some positional flexibility, not going to be a massive usage guy. But again, like Keldon Johnson, he's one of those guys that is kind of immune to the game script. So at $4,200, I do think you can do worse at the guard and forward and small forward position, especially where we haven't found a ton of value at those two positions yet.
It's a really good call. I like it. Clippers at home against the Thunder, and I felt good about Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I said both would go over 50 fantasy points if the Kings kept it close enough, and they did for long enough, and both went over 50 fantasy points. So, interesting spot here against the Thunder. Thunder, once again, going to be without Al Horford. We've seen Isaiah Roby play 24, 26, and 26 minutes the last three. He's been good. I mean, 27, 24, and 30, almost 33 fantasy points. 5K, so the price is coming up, but he still gives you that power forward flexibility. I mean, let's start with the Thunder. It's not a great spot for anybody. They're going to be huge underdogs here against a red-hot Clippers team that is really rolling right now. You can play SGA. I think the floor is there, but his ceiling games have been a little bit inconsistent this year, and now he's facing, you know, Kawhi and Paul George and this really solid defensive team. I really don't know if I want anybody from this team other than maybe Darius Bazley at under 5K. He's 4,900. It's the cheapest he's been in a long time.
Yeah, that's kind of the same line of thought I'm in. I think this is the first slate in quite a while that I'm full fading SGA. You know, when I looked at the injury report earlier and was looking through the slate, the first thing I did is I wanted to see how expensive Isaiah Roby is. And at 5K, I just don't know if I can get there against the Clippers front court, especially with Darius Bazley $100 cheaper. Like, that's, I understand he's been volatile. I understand he hasn't flashed that ceiling, but that's really cheap. That is really, really cheap for the caliber of player he is. So I don't mind it, but full transparency, if I'm running one lineup, I won't have any Thunder. If I'm running three or five, I probably won't have any Thunder.
Yeah, if I were to pick one player, it'd be Bazley. He's a solid rebounder. Horford's not in there, so that might help. Decent usage rate, and I think 4,900. I'm pretty sure it's the cheapest he's been all year, so I really don't hate that. Look, I mean, George and Kawhi are still really fairly priced. I don't think they'll be very popular on the slate with this game potentially being a blowout. I was more willing to risk it last game because the matchup was so good. This one's fine, but the Kings were literally like dead last in all their archetypes. If you get to them, you're going to get a good game because they dominate the usage, but they're not exactly priorities for me like they were on the last slate. I think Serge Ibaka is still too expensive at 5,700. I don't know why his price has not been moving fast enough, so I can't play him right now. Lou Williams is 3,700. I never thought
we'd see the day this year. Holy cow.
I just don't know what's happening.
And I still don't feel comfortable playing him. Like, that's what's crazy about it.
Yeah. Anybody on the Clippers stand out to you? It's really just those two. It really has been for a little bit now.
And that's kind of how I feel, too. I don't hate Luke Kennard at 4,100 because of how much he handles the ball with the second unit. But it's, again, like I've said, for 5 to 10 value plays already, you just don't need to go there.
Right. It's weird, man. Lou Williams just, not only is his production been down, but the minutes have been down too. So, Very strange. All right, two games left. Denver at Phoenix. Injury news here. Michael Porter Jr. is questionable. He could return again. He hasn't played since the end of December for Denver. Darius Arch, on the other hand, is out for Phoenix with health protocols. Where do you want to start? Go ahead.
I mean, I think regardless of MPJ status, obviously Nikola Jokic is in play. But again, you know, we've talked about it. Stefano's talked about it. Like, this isn't a Phoenix team we like to go out of our way to attack. Michael Porter Jr. coming back, hypothetically, say he comes back to a normal workload. I don't think Mike Malone would do that, understanding how they've handled him with kid gloves these last 18 months. But if he does, I'm trying to pull up the exact number. He's averaging a little over 40 touches per game. Nikola Jokic leading the league in touches per game. I don't think that will affect him much. It would obviously have the most direct impact on the likes of Will Barton, some Paul Millsap, maybe some Jamichael Green, maybe some Gary Harris touches. So I think Nikola Jokic is a little immune to the absence or presence, for better lack of a better word, of MPJ. So I still like him at 11K. I don't think he's my favorite spend up on the slate. I think I'd rather go Luka in the matchup with the Spurs for $100 less. And I truthfully would probably prefer Joel Embiid in his matchup for $900 less, but I get the play. Outside of him, because I really hate this matchup with the Suns, as nice as Jamal Murray is at 7K, I don't think I'll get there. I kind of feel the same way. I know. I kind of feel the same way about the rest of this Denver team. Like, Gary Harris is playing a fine amount of minutes for his price, but PJ Dozier has really been kind of eating into his role a bit. And last game against the Thunder was the first time PJ Dozier has seen under 20 minutes since the 10th. So the last about week and a half. So he's someone you can potentially consider at 4K, but other than them, there's not really anyone outside of Jokic I really care for.
Millsap's coming off a really nice game. Any interest in him if Porter's out?
See, that's not a bad call. I think this is a matchup, you know, slow paced, veteran team, hard nosed. Phoenix team who just kind of pounds it down low in the half court. I think that's that matchup kind of caters to Paul Millsap, but I would not expect 40 fantasy points again.
No.
I wouldn't be surprised though to see him in that 25 DK point range, which I guess at 4,800 is perfectly fine.
By the way, do you know who leads this Denver team in points per game off screens?
I don't know, but I'm going to throw up a guess. Is it Paul Millsap?
It's Nikola Jokic. Like,
oh my god,
they're just not, out not, here setting you screens think he'd for be Nikola the one Jokic.
Setting the screens, yeah.
It's so fun, man. He's the best. Still only 11K. I there's not many slates in my NBA DFS career where I haven't played Nikola Jokic. So he's so fun. Phoenix. I'm so tired of talking about this team. Another underwhelming game from Booker. DeAndre Ayton was the guy in the last game again, and he's kind of been coming on a bit as of late. I think their identity is with DeAndre Ayton in the half court, like we talk about. You know, he's among the league leaders in post points per game. That's why I liked him against Houston. They were bottom post defense. Denver allows the highest field goal percentage in basketball at the rim, so they don't really have any rim protection to stop Ayton. I like the price tag at 7,600. I think he's easily the top play from this team. And then the same thing I say every week every night with Chris Paul. He's 7,200. He's going to play 32 to 35 minutes, and he's going to get you 35 or so fantasy points. In cash games, he's fine. In tournaments, I just don't really see the appeal there.
Yeah, I completely agree. This whole team kind of carries that same mindset too. Like, I understand. And the thing is, if I'm playing Chris Paul, I want to stack him with DeAndre Ayton just because of how they are running that half-court pick-and-roll offense. I don't think I'll have any Devin Booker. But outside of them, the only other guy that I've been playing, I don't want to say religiously, but consistently from the Suns is Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
Minutes are fine, but he just does enough. And his price doesn't really ever reflect his production. He reminds me of last year's Royce O'Neal. Obviously a bit of a different player, but in terms of DFS production versus salary, he's in that Royce O'Neal range from last year where he's going to get you the consistent 20-plus DraftKings points that you need.
Yep, 4,400. He's still starting. And with Sarge out, the minutes should still be... With Sarge still out, the minutes should still be in that 26 to 28 range at the minimum, I would say.
Yep.
Let's close it out with the last game of the slate. Sacramento at home facing New York. This is a back-to-back for New York, right?
Yep. They play
Thursday.
It's supposed to tip off in a couple minutes here against the
Warriors.
The Warriors.
Austin Rivers didn't play tonight. He's questionable.
Alec Burks did play.
Right. And other than that, that's really it. I guess Whiteside and Bielitsa are questionable too, which is notable.
We can start with Marvin Bagley, back to breaking my heart last night.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Of course. Julius Randle, 9,100. Perfectly fine. You know, you're getting the volume in the peripherals. I have no problem with him. RJ Barrett's kind of interesting at 6,800. He's been really good the last three or four games. He has some of these huge rebounding games. Whenever he's under 7K, he's interesting to me, especially because small forward can be a really tough position at times to fill. Yeah, and you're getting 38 minutes from him in close games. Anybody else stand out from this team, though? Like, Elfrid Payton, not really. And now their wings and guards are getting healthy. So, like, Reggie Bullock and Kevin Knox are really viable.
And, like, because their wings and guards are getting healthy, it kind of takes Emmanuel quickly out of the conversation because he's only going to see about 15 to 17 minutes. And, you know, he is a high per-minute producer, but at 4,500, no thanks.
You could talk me into Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah, I don't think you ever have to really twist my arm to play him when he's under 6K. And with the bigs that Sacramento rolls out, they're probably going to play him a lot. Outside of Barrett, Randall, and some Mitch Rob, though. Like, the Knicks just aren't an offense I like to target. Like, they're
playing, they're kind of doing the same thing Cleveland's doing. They're playing slow and they're playing good defense,
which is why they're staying afloat. Their offense has, like, but I wrote this up, you know, for the Denver Gazette yesterday. Like, their offense has been horrible. Like, they failed to crack 100 points, which in today's NBA, like, that's, I don't want to say hard to do. But it's much more uncommon now where we see teams fall below that 100-point threshold. They have failed to crack that 100-point threshold in four of their last seven games. And in those four games, they've topped off at 91 points. They failed to crack 90 points in three games over the last seven. Like, that's not – like, it's an anemic offense, and they're staying afloat because they're defense. It's not a DFS team you want to target. I mean, I'm fine with Julius Randle because he's literally involved in everything, but – outside of him and Barrett, it's just meh.
What about the Kings? I don't love the price tag on De'Aaron Fox.
Neither do I. I mean,
8,800.
I'd rather scrap up a few hundred dollars extra, like $800 extra, and go up to Trae Young. And I mean, in that 8K range specifically,
I'd rather go down to Brogdon, Russell.
I'd rather play Kyrie for $200 more.
Yeah, and I'd rather go down to Brogdon and Russell.
I'd rather go down to Oladipo. Yep, so he's just one of those players sandwiched in that range.
He'll probably get you 40, but so can all these other guys with upside for more and better matchups.
Exactly.
What about the front court? Because
that's what I was about to ask.
I kind of like Rashawn Holmes here. New York's been pretty bad against centers. They give up a lot of blocks per game to the position. I think the most in basketball. Minutes should be stable with Hassan Whiteside questionable again. They're stable anyway, but even more so. Then Bagley's 5,500 if you want to go there.
Aside, like, you can play Marvin Bagley, and there is upside at that price, but there just is considerable downside.
Right, exactly. I think Holmes is pretty easily my favorite player from this team on this or in this game.
6,300 is a price that I'd be okay paying.
Other than that, though, like, I still don't feel confident in Tyrese Haliburton. His usage rate is so low. I was looking at it, like, his usage rate's like insanely low. But he gets a lot of efficient looks when he shoots the ball and when he passes the ball. So he gets decent assists and points with the low usage he gets. But it's tough to trust, and he's still not playing huge minutes right now.
I'll play him if De'Aaron Fox is out like everyone else. But it's just really hard to when he's not.
All right, anything else from this game?
No, we kind of crushed that slate in an efficient manner.
Yeah, it helps when three of the games or four of the games were from Wednesday night, and especially with like the COVID stuff, like if a guy's out for COVID, like they're not going to be back the next game. So the story can be kind of the same for a lot of these games we talked about, sure. Other than Miami and Toronto, where Siakam's injury could change things. But yeah, I'll be doing the game by game article. Got to write these 11 games. We'll have it up Friday morning. That way it's actually, you know, worth reading and usable. Joe will have the 5 stats article, and of course I'll have a bunch of live shows. You're on with Eddie on Friday, aren't you?
Yep, I'm with Eddie on Friday. I'm with Javi on Saturday.
And I'll be on the floor crying regardless of the outcome on Sunday evening with the Bills. So that's where I'll be.
Huh. I'm shipping you that folding table if they win.
I already told – so my uncle and brothers are in a group chat with me, and they sent the folding table picture at Dick's Sporting Goods that they're selling them right next to the Bills gear. And I was like, you know what? If they win, I'll jump through one. They win the Super Bowl, I said. If they win the Super Bowl, I'll jump through one.
Well, we know that's not going to happen.
Why?
I mean, you have Aaron Rodgers coming at your neck, man.
So if the Bills – we got to make a bet, a friendly bet, if the Bills and Packers get to the Super Bowl, which I hope happens because I love Rodgers, maybe my favorite quarterback ever. I love him, and that'd be really fun. So we'll definitely have to keep tabs on that.
I'll make the bet with you right now. If that happens, you know, if Bills-Packers Super Bowl, I think if the Packers – if the Bills win – it's going to be a little backwards. If the Bills win, I'll get you like a Davante Adams shirt.
I like that, yeah. Who do you want, Diggs?
I want Stephon Diggs.
All right, I like it. That's the deal. And either way, it's a win-win because I get to see you wear a Stephon Diggs jersey if the Bills lose. And if they win, the Bills win a Super Bowl and I get Davante Adams shirt. So
yeah, that's very true.
That reminds me, D-Bro and I will be doing a really short podcast for the 2 conference championship games. If you're playing DFS, that'll be up tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow early evening. And again, check out all the content at FTN. A lot of people put in a lot of great work getting recognized with their FSWA nominations this week. So appreciate everybody. As always, have a great weekend. Best of luck. We'll be back on Monday. Go Bills.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.